And it's no wonder there is such a crisis of mental health among young adults and young people, because there's no bearing, like there's no compass for like, where am I going? What is my life about?
Are you looking for a comfortable brown scapular that won't break? Check out our sponsor, scapulars.com. They use American-made paracord, so it's super strong. And they also use Australian merino wool, so it's super comfortable. It feels like you're getting a warm hug from your heavenly mother. Click on the link above or below in the description and get yourself the most durable, comfortable scapulars in the world. Hey, thanks for joining us today on Our Reason for Hope. I just found out the other day from one of our producers that, you know, more than half the people that watch this show, this podcast, do not subscribe to us. This is insane. I mean, what are you waiting for? Hit the subscribe button now. All right, back to the show. Hello and welcome back to A Reason for Hope. I'm your host, Mario Costabile, and I am super excited to be with all of you today. And we have a super guest, Bobby Angel. How are you today, Bobby?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. You look good. You look very well rested. You look really calm.
As a dad of five, I don't know about that. It's all the camera.
You got no bags under your eyes or anything. You must be sleeping. Something must be happening.
Yeah, someone is sleeping. But
it's not you. We have a couple people here in our studio, here on our team, who are new dads. So they're like, no, everyone's talking about, you know, being sleep deprived and how beautiful it is to get 2 hours in at one time. So, but I know you have a young family and a lot of your kids are all crowded in together. So I'm sure it's loud too as well, right?
It's we're blessed with this open concept house that is great. You also hear everything. So
that's good. No secrets.
I could use a few more walls, to be honest.
So what is the makeup? You have boys, girls?
We have three girls, two boys. So we have five on earth. We have three in heaven. The spread is from currently 11 is the oldest, two is the youngest.
Amazing. Well, God bless you. It's good. You're in the thick of things. I think I share with you, I have five kids too, but my kids are much older and I have six grandkids. So it's great. Children are beautiful and what a blessing it is and what a gift from God. So today we're going to be talking about some serious things. You just wrote a book, right? Just recently released, The Postmodern Predicament, which is an awesome book that is really incredible. And I'm super excited to talk about it. Tell me a little bit about it. What does it mean?
I was blessed to get a Catholic understanding of the story of philosophy because of my 3-year discernment of the priesthood. So I was cradle Catholic, born and raised in the faith. Came into the faith is something living and real late in high school through a really dynamic youth group. College for me was a bit of fighting the Lord, like going all in, but also resisting what I felt was a draw towards the priesthood. And a few years after college, was firefighting for a bit, running away from him, finally surrendered, said yes to the journey of seminary formation for the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida, where I'm from. And there you learn philosophy first before theology. We're all discerning, am I called to be a Catholic priest? How do I baptize babies? How do I hear confessions? And you start learning philosophy. So a lot of guys were very confused, like, what are we doing here? But we have to learn, what does it mean to be a human? And the story of those questions before we get to the revelation of God. That's the Catholic ordering of things. Well, long story short, I felt the call to marriage about 3 years into that journey, prayed for a loud, clear sign that was blonde and I couldn't miss. And the Lord sent me my wife. We've just, you know, we celebrated 12 years of marriage with all these wonderful children. I taught for a while at an all-boys Catholic high school. And it was amazing years there doing campus ministry, running retreats, but also teaching theology and later teaching philosophy to seniors. So I cut my teeth on how do you make philosophy meaningful and understandable to a 17-year-old? And if you take philosophy in a secular undergraduate course, it's going to leave out a whole lot. It kind of goes from the ancient Greeks, and then there's the 1500-year jump as if nothing important happened. to the Enlightenment. And I always wonder, like, I feel like we're missing something in the middle, but you don't know, like, you just don't know. We're not told the story. But because of my seminary journey, I was given the story. I was given the Catholic understanding of the history of philosophy and why it matters, why ideas have consequences. Ideas, what does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean for a good and just, what does a good and just society look like? Do we have inherent dignity and worth or not? Like, all of these are really philosophical questions that play out in real life, have real life consequences, have consequences in the public square. And so we're living in this really wonky time right now that people describe as postmodern. And the book aims to try to be a readable explanation of how we got here and what do we do about it from a Catholic Christian lens that is, again, trying to understand it in layman's terms. There's a lot of great philosophy books out there that can be very hard to read if you're not familiar with that topic. So I tried to write something that was pastoral that you could give to a high schooler, but also the busy parent to learn, how did we get here and what do we do about it?
Well, you mentioned, ideas have consequences. Elaborate on that. What do you mean by that?
You know, we look back to the ancient world, and if a human baby was deemed unfit or deformed or unwanted, I would just leave him out to die. And who cares? Like, it's the survival of the fittest. So this is from the Spartans to the Athenians to cultures around the world. Like, again, human sacrifice was just kind of, that was out there. The cult of sacrificing people to different gods. Like, so are we made in the image and likeness of God or not? That's a Christian idea. You know, that has consequences for what do we do to the most weak and those who are judged unfit for life. Do we just discard them or do we actually create a place for them in society? I disagree with someone politically. What does that give me the right to do? So in terms of, like, yeah, what is the idea of human life? Well, that has consequences for a society based on how we answer that question. Does the, what is the point of education? This is a fun one I like to poke people with, having taught at a high school. What is the point? Is it just to go to Harvard, to get on a conveyor belt, to then do the next thing? Like, what is the point of it? Is it just to memorize and spit back answers for a test and then forget it as soon as you walk out of the room? Or if it's just to get a grade, why not let ChatGPT do it for me? What does it mean even to live a good life? What does it mean to be a good man? And depending on how I answer these questions, my life's going to play out very differently. And so these are some of the oldest questions that the human person has rightly wrestled with.
So once you review these concepts, these perspectives, essentially, that determines how you move forward as a person is what you're kind of getting at, right? And those decisions, those rationales, regardless of where they go, have a consequence within itself. Is that what you're trying to say, Bobby?
Yeah. And a lot of people don't ask these questions. We're starved for curiosity and wonder. When Socrates said, wonder is the beginning of wisdom, to look up at the stars and just be dumbstruck and say, I didn't create this. Why am I here? What am I doing? Where am I going? Which are also religious questions. And the Catholic understanding is that it's not just this compartmentalized philosophy against religion. What does Athens have to do with Greece? It's like, no, faith. John Paul II, who was a philosopher pope, as well as a poet, an athlete, a saint, said that faith and reason.
He was into the arts too.
Oh yeah. I mean, his letter to artists, he was, again, a poet and a playwright, and knew the power of beauty and culture and ideas to, as resistance, to keep, like, the Polish culture alive, let alone what has been, like, the onslaught against the Christian world for the last 100+ years. So, yeah, John Paul II wrote that faith and reason are like two wings of a bird, and you need both to soar. So the rightful understanding is like, these are philosophical questions, but they're also religious questions. They get to the heart of man, a God who is always calling us towards himself, who gave us our intellect and our reason and wants us asking questions.
What do you think are the most philosophical and questions to ask today that people are struggling with regarding, you know, morals, philosophy, religion? What are the principal ones that people are really going astray with?
Why am I here? And isn't that a question as old as time? It's, does my life have meaning or a purpose? And Arthur Brooks is a business professor, but a devout Catholic, and he writes a lot about happiness, and there's a lot of happiness studies he puts out there. But he talks a lot about meaning. It's not enough to just be on the conveyor belt of college degree, job, wife, house. That'll be happy. It's like, if you can do all that and be deeply miserable, you could also have nothing but have a life rich in meaning. So, and John Paul II even set out to answer those questions of like, what, why am I here? And where am I going? Because a lot of people, like, you can kind of funnel everything down to these two things. And for the curious mind that would actually dare to sit and get uncomfortable with these questions, you know, not just, you know, we can be tempted towards just entertaining and scrolling ourselves to death, to drowning ourselves in pleasure and substances and distractions, in numbing out. Or again, to that message of life has no meaning. There is no God. Just figure it out and make it up on your own. That is to the fallen part of us, that's liberating, but that is heavy. And it's no wonder there is such a crisis of mental health among young adults and young people, because there's no bearing, like there's no compass for like, where am I going? What is my life about? And we're meaning seeking creatures, so we're going to put that meaning somewhere, and whatever happens to capture our passion or our emotions at the moment. So this is where too is like, you can point to where a person might be passionate about certain causes or certain things and be like, yeah, there's something underneath that you're looking for and you're seeking. And now let's get more uncomfortable with the deepest questions. Why am I here? Where am I going?
Yeah, I mean, those are questions that most people don't ask, you know, for whatever reason. If they're struggling with anxiety, you would think it would be pretty logical, right? But they don't ask those kinds of questions to seek the core of where the truth resides. And especially today, you know, with the internet, there's so much stuff on the internet that it skews people's perception of what the truth really is. So how would you recommend, you know, we navigate in this digital age to help people search for the truth and really assist the church in navigating people toward the truth, so people can find peace, can find resolve, and as you stated, you know, why am I here? Giving us the answer for meaning of purpose.
We can't give what we don't have. So we need to also, as parents, teachers, educators, disciples, make sure we're grounding ourselves in the truth. And Christ reveals himself to be the way, the truth, and the life. Not a way, not your truth, a life if you want it. And there's the demand, like there's the sword he brings, is you got to decide, you got to make a decision. And, you know, mercy too, but the book I wrote is I try to be as pastoral as possible, having come out of youth ministry and various forms of it over the years. Everyone's got a story. And so to not come out trying to dunk on anyone, but we can criticize ideas. We can throw some cold water on what are the ideas under this movement or this message, while still keeping a heart for the person and their story, the ways that maybe they've been hurt, maybe the ways they've been hurt by the church, or have felt unheard, or that their questions were shut down, or they weren't allowed to express doubt. Like, God can handle our questions. God's a big boy. I had a priest professor who said, Jesus came to take away your sin, not your brain.
That's a good one.
The first thing is, we can't give what we don't have. So where am I falling prey to busyness and hurriedness and online divisiveness? Where do I need to slow down and make more time for prayer and get more in touch with reality? I'm not a Luddite. I think like we're using tech right now. Tech is just the tool. But man, it's convenient and it can suck us in and it keep us, by the nature of the internet and some of these platforms, it puts us into these echo chambers where we fall prey to the us versus them, the tribalism. And so some of the healthiest things you can do is just put the phone down, is be in nature, the self-regulating effect of being in nature, being grounded, taking a walk, leaving your phone at home, and being forced to think, being forced to listen to creation, to what God might be stirring in you, so that you could act, we could actually transmit something of the divine life to someone else, rather than just, here's content, here's a podcast, and I'm just as hurried and just as dysregulated as the next person. There has to be something, and I saw this like in different, my own formators, my own core members, there was something that's like, you, there's something different about you. Like you actually like believe this stuff. Or there's a joy I can't put my finger on. Or you're actually listening to me. Like, it's not that I have to have all the answers, but that I'm willing to listen and hear you out.
Hello, and thanks for being with us here on A Reason for Hope podcast. Been very grateful of the many years that we've been doing this for you. This is our sixth season with hundreds of podcasts already released. Although they're free to watch and listen to, they're not free to produce. So I'm asking that you discern to contributing and donate to A Reason for Hope podcast. We're a nonprofit organization. Every dollar, every penny is tax deductible. All you have to do is go to our website and click donation and navigate the podcast. All the funds that you donate will go to the production of this podcast. Thanks again, and may God bless you. Well, you mentioned a little bit about division. I mean, political division seems to be sharper and higher than ever. How does the postmodernism feed into this polarization? And what role do you think the church can play in healing this division?
Postmodernism is really a rebellion against modernism, which in a nutshell is the movement that's everything could be put under a microscope, everything could be empirically tested. Well, we know that's not really true. There's things like beauty and friendship and love, which make life worth living, that you can't scientifically reduce to be under a microscope to be true. The modernist also, that time period was a real kind of striving towards a utopia. Like, look at all these advances in technology. Look at we're shaking our, these new discoveries. We're shaking off the shackles of this embarrassing religious tradition we grew up with. And we're going to like have real utopia on the horizon. Well, then World War One, and then World War II, and the bloodiest century and the 20th century known to humanity. It's like, well, actually, we're not that great. So postmodernism is a bit of that. You can't put everything under a microscope, but also a rebellion against all these different structures and authorities and narratives that have come before. It's just on you to make up your own meaning. So the things that used to bind us, such as a national history we could believe in, a national story, now everything's got to get torn down. Everything's got to be put into question. Statues got to come down. All the heroes you looked up to, they're bunk. Like, that is an offshoot of the postmodern rebellion. There are no heroes. Everything is reduced to power, which it just leads to this cycle of revenge. Who's on top? It's not trying to get after authentic reconciliation, which is what the gospel offers. Not just an eye for an eye, but a true forgiveness and healing. So what the church can do is be not afraid, is stand firm to the stories. And not just, again, legends and myths, but like real true, like the heroic witness of Christ and the saints, and the saints who did the opposite of what everyone else was doing in the age. And that's what a big reason why they stood out. You know, their commitment to the poor, their commitment to causes that maybe weren't popular, their devotion in prayer, that they weren't just activists, the saints. You know, they were rooted in the love of the Lord. And out of that came any meaningful writings or teachings or miracles. So we need to, yeah, stand firm and be not afraid, and the gates of hell will not prevail. And again, holding intention, like to preach the truth in love. So it's not about wielding the truth with a hammer and just wanting to dunk on people. It's really about, there's a person here. How can I love them? How can I listen to their story? And then not just one-sided affirmation and listening, but I then provide like, yeah, I hear you. And here's I think what we can do about it. Here's the way out. Here's to re-anchor yourself in what is actually true. Beauty's, if I may, beauty's one of the fastest ways I caught the attention of my students when I was teaching. Because we could talk about the true and the good, but beauty captivates. Beauty just stops you in your tracks. And whether that's a sunset or a beautiful person or architecture. So in my class, I would show different buildings from like Gothic cathedrals and different monuments that happened in the time of the Renaissance and the paintings. And then I would show stuff from the last 100 years, like the brutalism, the concrete of the Soviet Union, the melting clocks of Salvador Dali, or just the Jackson Pollock colors, to a urinal being put in a French museum, to a banana being duct taped to a wall. And we call this art. It's like, well, okay, what happened? Like, well, ideas have consequences. Is there actually objective beauty that I could point to that I should work towards that strikes me? And there's a gut level like, yeah, that's ugly. Yes, a banana taped to a wall is dumb. Yes, this concrete building with the fluorescent lighting sucks my soul away. Like, so beauty also as a way of recapturing what makes us human, what refreshes us and brings the soul back to life.
It's funny, you know, there are things that are dumb, as you had stated, that if you just look at them, they don't make sense. But there is, you know, there is a lot of confusion regarding the amount of information that's online. Now with AI, I tell you, I go on social media, I go on YouTube, and I check out stuff to try to keep up with all the information and all the sources of information. And there's an enormous amount of AI that's online now that you don't know if it's up or down or where it's coming from or whatnot. So I like what you had said, what the church has always done in sharing the truth and being bold. But we certainly want to encourage the church to continue to have the courage to share the truth. But there is a lot of confusion out there with all this media, all this stuff. That how does a Catholic discern between what's real, what's not real, what the church teaches? You know, what would you recommend? Like, where, you know, for a high school student that is so impressionable, so you know, even college students now, you know, where they're like, you know, indoctrinated with so much. I hate to say the word crap, but they are. So, you know, how do we, as parents, grandparents, where do we go?
Yeah, I mean, the gut level answer I have is test the spirits. Is instead of just reacting, sit with it. Does this sound true? Does it sound legit? The sources, like there's reputable ones like a Catholic Answers or Ascension Press that I've been blessed to work with for a number of years that. You can trust the sources. You can trust the sources to be as equally thorough and discerning. Because it is difficult to have this influx of data and information and not, I mean, it's crazy even. Like I saw some AI produced newscasters that looked like real human persons, but then there's like, you know, a giant squid coming out of the background of the ocean or like an alien ship coming down and they're like, and I'm not real. Like, so just, yeah, it's getting blurred of like, how do I discern like footage even? Is this a real thing or not? That's where, again, like test all the spirits, to note even like the spiritual undercurrent. Like from a Saint Ignatius would say, like, watch the for the consolations and the desolations. What is giving me peace? What is giving me anxiety? What is leading me to love and grow in patience? What is leading me to, again, that us versus them mentality or division? So to take note, like, what's happening in your own heart as I'm reading this article or watching this particular video? And that the church also moves in centuries, not in minutes. So there are a lot of great people getting into these digital spaces and have been, and forging new ways, even kind of creating like a Catholic version of AI. But to also know, like, we're not shooting from the hip. We're the church is patient. And Pope Leo has indeed called out AI, and something we need to talk about and take seriously as human persons, because we're made for communion. And I work in ministry. I work in a bit in the mental health space as a mentor through the Catholic Psych Institute. And there's a lot of young people, and not so young, going to AI as like for therapy. Like, you're seeking out a non-human for a human intervention. And this thing is available to me, this bot is available to me 24/7, will tell me what I want to hear, and makes no demands on me. And it can feel like I'm talking to a human person. Again, those lines get blurred, and I can get helpful data, but in terms of a life-giving relationship of love, we're meant for human beings. We're meant for persons. We're meant for other individuals created in the image and likeness of God. And in God alone, our heart is going to be satisfied, not in anything else. So, on our own discernment, yeah, to test the sources, watch what's going on in our own hearts, and have patience, because it's a wild west right now.
Yeah, I agree. I test the sources for sure, right? And seek out good Catholic resources, like you mentioned, Catholic Answers. I use the magisterion.com, which is sort of like an AI, but it points everything to the Bible, everything that's truthful that the church teaches, right? The resources come directly from the church. So the catechism, it's rooted in the catechism. So right on, you know, we need to really use resources and things that are valid and truthful from where they're coming from. I wanted your take on A Ray of Hope. Our organization essentially evangelizes through events and music and films and podcasts such as this. But we also evangelize through social media. And I think there's good social media out there. Do you have any pointers? Like, for example, we always put up information about the saints or certain teachings of the church or biblical teachings and things that are happening within the church. Would you affirm, or what is your thought about drawing people to things that are good and holy that are online, as opposed to things that are pushing people away from the church?
We cannot surrender the digital. Pope Benedict XVI called the internet the digital continent, and we cannot surrender it to purely secular, atheistic, or otherwise forces. So we do need to have evangelists of all stripes wading in, creating content, giving content and information about the church and the saints and the joy of the gospel, for sure. And we just canonized Carlo Acutis, an Italian millennial, died at age of 15, who coded websites, who created a website Amazing. Dedicated to documenting Eucharistic miracles around the world, which is still alive today. So, like, we literally have a saint of the internet. So it's not if, but we should. Also, to be discerning, though, of it's just really easy to get sucked in and dysregulated and then miss out. And I'm a dad of five, and it's like, I have to use the internet. I have to be online for my work, but to what cost? And to be discerning of, again, am I getting sucked in too far? When do I need to toggle off? When do I need to get back to eyeball time with the real people right around me? You know, a good friend of in ministry says, serve in your 5-mile radius. Make sure you're knowing the names of your neighbors, you're serving your parish community and those around. And should God give you more territory online or otherwise, beautiful. do right by it. But to, it's the Catholic both and, you know, mm-hmm. and even my wife and I have had to discern, like, I've just taken a break. Like, there's a lot of people that will get off social media for Lent, or sometimes for a whole month, they'll just get off, and it just, it does wonders to plug back into reality. So it's the both and of, we need evangelists and good content, but then to also know thyself and know when you need to take a step back from it.
Yeah. 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 Want to go into another area. One of the most painful cultural issues we face today is the rise of gender dysphoria. In what ways do you think the postmodern mindset contributes to this struggle? And how can Catholics respond with both truth, you know, and compassion?
Yeah, 100%. And this is, I think, one of the most visible fruits of the postmodern thought, which we could go back to Descartes in a way, Rene Descartes of the Enlightenment era, who wrote, "I think, therefore I am." So before then, it was like the focus was the objective. Reality is the objective, and there's my subjective experience, but objective has greater weight. So what is reality is outside of me, the Beatitudes, the commandments, the law, and like the law of the cosmos and nature. And what there's been is a slow shift over the last 400 plus years of, yeah, that's all real, but what about me? And now we have the subjective, the subject, having greater, rising of greater importance than the objective. It's not about me conforming my meaning to the higher meaning. It's about my, the meaning I give it is the highest. And if there are no narratives to be believed in, if we have killed God, as Nietzsche said, if all of the authority has just been kind of stripped away, lost its credibility, well, then it's on me. What do I want my reality to be? What do I want my truth to be? And so out of that, you know, rebellion of sorts comes even the rebellion against the body. Well, maybe I'm in the wrong body. Maybe I, and again, it goes even back to Plato of the emphasis of the soul over the body. The goal is for the soul to escape the body. That's not true Christian thought. I call it Bugs Bunny theology, where you get hit with a hammer and you, your ghost floats up with a harp and then you go to heaven. It's like, no, you're not you till you get your body back. I believe in the resurrection of the body and life everlasting. You are your body. And the incarnation taught us the body is good and to be made holy. And what absolutely we see now with part of it is that it's not all tech, but part of it is the tech and young people getting plugged into others from around the world and being taught these ideas, this really painful and confusing time of puberty. And all of a sudden, like, especially for girls, especially this, like, you're uncomfortable in your body. Well, here's a way to escape it. Here's a way to get attention for a young person's feeling like they don't matter. They want attention. They want to have something special about them. There's been a lot documented on the contagion effect of it. And again, you've got like a lot of big money behind the scenes of like, hey, we could get these young people on these drugs for life. And I mean, mercy. Like really, truly mercy upon this generation that has been fed some awful ideas and just this kind of affirmation only, let's get you medicated under the knife as soon as possible, because then you'll really be you. So again, on the one hand, compassion. And on the other hand, we can push against these ideas, which they don't hold water and they're not getting to the root issue. And this is, again, like John Paul II in his Theology of the Body, talking about the importance of our masculinity, our femininity, a gift by God that surely, yes, we're in a wounded world and people have wielded the sexual gift in destructive ways against one another. But the cure is not to toss it aside, to not just embrace a wholehearted war of the sexes, or even, again, maybe the hubris of thinking I could change my sex. When like every cell of mine is ordered towards the masculine. Like it's not just about I can dress in a different way or chop some things off or do some things to augment myself and then I'll be a different sex. It's just, we are kind of living in this upside down what has happened. And I think you're also seeing some real pushback too of like, wait, hold the phone. Like, this has gone too far, especially for minors, especially for minors. And this is where, again, we can't be afraid to raise our voices and say in love, no, like, no, like, we're not, you can't go this far. But again, how did we get here? It's the fruit of these ideas.
It's, yeah. I'm going to share something personal. So I think, well, first of all, it's, you had mentioned it's the young people. I think as adults, we need to reveal the truth, as you shared, you know, with love and the truth and the logic of the truth, right? So I was with my grandson maybe a month or two ago, and we were just watching TV, and a news program came up, you know, and it was this young boy, not too much older. He's about six, and this young boy was eight or nine, was, you know, had long hair and a dress, and they were commenting on this on television. It's because it's common, you know, commonplace now. And he looks at me and goes like, you know, because they kind of said, well, you know, he thinks he's a girl and that he wants to dress like that. And he just looked at me and just said, that's stupid, you know, coming out of a young boy, six-year-old. Like, so the thing is, like, and not that I'm saying that this is something that people don't truly feel, but how could a young person know their sexuality at six or seven or eight? They don't. So I guess what I'm trying to get to, and I want to have a sort of like a rapport discussion with you, is like, it's adults that are infusing these thoughts into these young kids and then allowing them the, I mean, a lot of parents today will just want their kids to feel good regardless of what the consequences are, right? It's like, we're going to do this for you because you need to feel better about the situation. So there's a lack of discipline and there's a lack of sharing the truth with them. That's harmful in the long run. And so going back, your thoughts on that, but also going back that we as a society, we as a church, often the church is kind of silent on this issue. We don't hear enough about it. It's like one of the hot buttons. So, I mean, what do you think about what I'm sharing and what I'm talking about here? Because this kind of gets under my skin, this whole thing, because I know that people are suffering. I'm not denying the reality of that suffering or conflict, but there is a sense of the reality of the truth biologically in people.
Yeah, it's like the emperor's new clothes in a way, but everyone's too afraid to say the truth, because part of it is just, yeah, the online nature of these mobs and trying to cancel people and run people out of their jobs, or you know, there are bad actors and bad philosophies at play for sure. There are a lot of people that just want to go along to get along, keep their head down, keep their job. There are parents who are scared because they're kind of put forth this false decision of like, well, your kid could be miserable and might kill themselves if you don't affirm who they really think they are. And so they're given this like, do you want a live or dead? It's like a decision that any parents, like it's horribly manipulative, yeah. And mm-hmm. It puts parents in such a difficult spot.
Fearful.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of fear that's running the show instead of just the adults needing to be the adults and saying no. It is. Yeah. And so even to ask the question, like, what happened? Like, what, how, again, how did we get here? How have these ideas spread so rapidly? Why are we being forced to accept them? Things that didn't exist, you know, 15, 20 years ago, somehow this was always true. G.K. Chesterton called it like the chronological snobbery, thinking that we are, who are the latest are somehow the brightest and the wisest. Everyone else before us were idiots. It's like, no, it's probably the opposite. Like your six-year-old grandchild who could call a spade a spade.
Will your book help parents, young parents, like really giving them the resources to, I think you or I might have said it. We just need courage to mm-hmm. speak the truth and reveal it and share it with love, conviction. But the truth is the truth. I mean, we've gotten into this rat hole of relativism that is just insane now. It's getting worse and worse and worse. It's like, no, that's not blue. That's red. It is red. It's red. You know, it's like how crazy we've become. So will your book be able to share this kind of information, give people some resources?
Yeah, it definitely will help paint a broad picture of how we got here without, it's not a grad level philosophy book. So again, mm-hmm. I've had mature high schoolers and busy parents read it and give me really good feedback that it was understandable. And also gave them some hope. There's a lot of good philosophy books that bring you like explain how we got here, but then it's just kind of like, and good luck, we're doomed. I dare to actually provide some kind of roadmap and hope for recovering some sanity and the courage to reclaim beauty and stand in the truth. The truth is refreshing.
Yeah.
When you actually are like, oh yeah, I could say that. And that is also like what, when Soviet Russia was trying to beat down the countries of the Eastern Bloc, it was all about fear. It was all about, you cannot say what's actually true. And you just have to suppress it and suppress it. And it sucked people's souls away. And people went underground, or they just kind of learned, either like kind of gave in to despair and like splitting themselves. It's like, yeah, I guess red is blue. Or they said, no, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's exhilarating. It's like enough of the lie. And I think most people recognize that it's stupid and it's a lie that we're just, you know, exacerbating into the culture. It's like, but it's exhilarating to live within the truth. It's hard. It's not easy. Mm. So let's, you know, I encourage all our viewers and listeners that, you know, grab Bobby's book. Let's check it out. I think the more we know, the more we develop our intellect, the better we can be a beacon, a light, and a leader ourselves, because we have to be the example, you know, in our church. We have to be the one that, you know, has the courage to be courageous and share the truth, even if it's not what people are saying that are agreeable to that, you know? And I want to encourage the church, if they're members of the church, the clergy, our religious, you know, guys, we all have to be united in sharing these kinds of principles. Right, Bobby?
Oh, amen. Yeah. And they crucified our Lord. So if we think we can make it out unscathed, we're fooling ourselves. But I mean, for like the joy of the hope that lay before him, Jesus laid down his life. Like for the joy of the battle and the souls that need to hear the truth, like the young people that are starving to hear that there is a God who loves you, your life has meaning. And I don't need to have all the answers to that. I can't know this person's life, but I can at least bless them with those words. Like, yeah, you don't know the impact you're going to have by just daring to pass on the blessing that God has given you.
Amen. Amen. Well, Bobby, you've been a joy hanging with you. Is there anything else you want to share with our viewers and listeners? Anything you want to promote outside of your book, talks?
My wife and I, our website's jackieandbobby.com. We've been blessed to work with Ascension Press for about 10 years now, doing videos for them on YouTube. We travel and we speak. I also personally mentor people through the Catholic Psych Institute. If anyone is looking for some one-on-one accompaniment, you can go to catholicpsych.com/Bobby, and that's my landing page to find out more.
It's great. And we affirm that. We did something with the Catholic Psych back in June. We had Greg as a guest as well. So all that information will be in the description section on our website and on YouTube and podcast section. So, all right, Bobby, well, thank you so much for, you know, spending this time with me. I wish you all the best, your family, your wife, and God bless you. In addition to producing this podcast, A Ray of Hope is also known for producing events such as retreats, missions, conferences, and concerts. If you'd like to learn more about what we offer, just go to our website and click on Experience. There you can see and learn all the various programs that we offer. God bless you, and we hope to see you soon.